Welcome back to another amazing episode of Politateen, where high schoolers Varun Katathala and Damian Galvin engage in perspective-filled conversations on America's most pressing issues. Visit www.politateen.com for more content. Happy listening, guys.
We're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Politateen podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Katathala, back again for our second live streamed and video version of our podcast. We had one a while ago. We didn't record it, though, so you guys weren't able to view it. If you were on our Twitch stream at twitch.tv/Damian_Galvin, I believe that's what it is.
Yep. Look at you.
I'm a big subscriber, but you can go view it there. If you were there last time, thank you so much for being our viewer. But today we have an amazing episode. We hoped it would be around just the election that happened yesterday. As we do know, Senator-elect Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff have both won the election. John Ossoff by more than the threshold of 0.5% that Purdue would need to be under to call for a hand recount. So those are pretty secure right now. But we have some kind of breaking news today. Saddening news. I don't want to seem, it is very, very saddening for our democracy. And we talked about earlier in private, it is the storming of the Capitol building as, doomsday-esque as that seems. That is what happened today, in essence. And to discuss it, we have one of our Republican correspondents, Will Carroll, a guy who's been on our podcast since day one. Will has been in our journey throughout the whole way as we've made this podcast what it is today. So thank you so much, first of all, for being here with us today, Will. And a last word from all of us here at Politateen before we move on to the introductions from Will and all of us is thank you to all of our law enforcement officials who are working hard to secure the conditions of the Capitol building today. That's just from all of us here at Politateen, myself, Will, Damian, and the whole staff here. But Will, if you want to quickly introduce yourself to all of our guests today, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, guys, I'm the conservative correspondent, Will Carroll, for the Politateen podcast. This is my 8th or 9th episode coming on. And, here at Politateen, we had a New Year's resolution for the year 2021. And I put as one of mine to come on this podcast at least 15 times. So this is number one, and I'll be marking down from now on, but I'm just glad you guys are able to have me.
Absolutely. Unfortunate that we have to have you with such contentious circumstances. Like Varun said, we wanted to have you as a guest on, kind of just to make fun of you for not winning in the Senate. No, I'm just kidding. We just wanted to have you. We invited Will actually even before Ossoff and Warnock were announced as winners. We wanted to just talk about whatever transcended yesterday, regardless of who won and who lost. Now we know that Warnock and Ossoff won. But unfortunately, there has been something overshadowing this victory. I don't want it to be overshadowed on the podcast, but it's something that we definitely can't go without talking about. But before we do, I just want to mention quickly the importance and the historical relevance of what transcended yesterday, not what transcended necessarily today, because I can assure you that that'll take up a big portion of this podcast. But whatever your political views are, there is no doubt that Reverend Raphael Warnock is a child of Georgia. He's a pastor at
Ebenezer Baptist.
Yeah,
Church.
I can never say Ebenezer. Yep. Yeah, I can never say Ebenezer for some reason. But he that's the spiritual home of Martin Luther King Jr. And beyond that, he's the first African American black senator from Georgia. I was talking to Varun. That's crazy. 2021, we're still having firsts for minorities. It's just a reminder that the times of racial segregation weren't that long ago. And the times of not being able to overcome our differences are obviously not that long ago. But John Ossoff is a Jewish journalist, for those that aren't aware. He becomes the youngest senator to be elected in over 40 years. He beat David Perdue, who I would also consider a child of Georgia. This is the first time I think in 20 years that a Georgia senator, or that a seat has been a Georgia senatorial seat has been filled by a Democrat, let alone two. you know, it's not something to overlook or to take lightly. It's an achieving moment, especially, you know, in Senator-elect Raphael Warnock being the first Black senator of Georgia. We'll talk about a little bit of his words, but Will, what do you have to say about what happened yesterday in terms of the election?
Well, yesterday, you know, we saw just so much voter turnout, which was amazing. Kelly Loeffler, Perdue, Ossoff, Warnock, they all had at least 2 million votes, which was phenomenal. So for about, like, you know, about 4.5 million votes for the Democratic Party and closing in on 4.5 for the Republican Party, just to see the amount of people who are getting out and voting, especially in, you know, areas where they might not be voting or people who might not be voting, just seeing people recognize that their vote matters. And, you know, this year, everyone's vote mattered. And that's a really important thing that we saw. And, you know, I was kind of worried that, you know, people wouldn't be voting as much as they did in the general election. They wouldn't turn out. But I mean, I think this is one of the reasons that we know that, and we'll get into this later, but the reasons that we know that there was no voter fraud in, you know, our general election is because, you know, people who really thought that Perdue and Loeffler were going to win obviously didn't pay any attention to how a Democrat won Georgia. So they thought that a Republican, let alone two Republicans, would win it. I think that an Ossoff and Warnock victory was really predictable. But again, voter turnout is a big deal. And, you know, it's really incredible to see so many Georgians get out there and voting.
Definitely. Yeah, just to chime in here for a minute, I think that it's important to say that if it was any other president in the Oval Office, I think that Perdue and Loeffler would have won by wide margins. Let's not, you know, detract from the fact that Georgia is the Deep South. We live in the Deep South, a place wherein it's been a Republican stronghold for as long as I know. And so I think that it was quite historic. I think it was a rebuke of Trumpism. I talked about it a while ago this Monday on our podcast, episode number 61, Intelligence is Attractive, on how I predicted that if both seats or even one of them were won by John Ossoff or Raphael Warnock, it would mean that Trumpism failed one more time, and that it may mean that Republicans are going to let go of Trump and the image that he pervades. Because to be frank here, guys, Trump being in the Oval Office through the 4 years he had served as president, it cost them the Senate, it cost them the House of Representatives, and it cost them the Oval Office. And so I think that today and what happened yesterday might mark the final rebuke of Trumpism and maybe a return to a common sense conservatism, in my opinion. I think that I hope that it happens, but after today, I really don't know. But I think that it's still historic for Democrats to win in this state. It's going to be an uphill battle, especially in the Senate. You talk about the filibuster, how realistically Democrats need 60 votes for every single measure to pass. They don't have that still because of the filibuster, and the cloture needs 60 votes to pass. So let's not detract from the fact that there is going to be compromise have to be made on Capitol Hill. It's not going to be a smooth road for either party, especially Republicans, but this marks a significant victory for Georgia Democrats and Democrats across the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in essence last night, a victory for democracy was marked. As Will mentioned, voter turnout was absolutely insane, especially for an election that didn't feature any presidential candidates. And especially for an election following an election that just featured some presidential candidates. People don't want to go out and wait in lines twice. And they did. And they made their voices heard. The people made their voices heard yet again. And I think that it is a rebuke of Trumpism, especially in ruby red Georgia, right? I mean, even the clay's red here. And we saw that blue turnout was insane. And you might think that that's a good thing. You might think that that's a bad thing. One thing that I do know is that for democracy, it's amazing, and it's what we want. Unfortunately, we saw, as Reverend Warnock said, you know, it's dawn right now. It's dark, but the moon, the morning will soon come. And I was with the thought that that the sun was coming. I thought that maybe we were in dawn. And I thought that the election yesterday was a testament to the sun coming over the horizon. But I think that with what happened today and the elephant in the room that I'm sure we're about to go on and address, that maybe it's not dawn yet. Maybe we're still in the midst of night, but soon, hopefully, it will be dawn, and soon it will be morning, and there will be sunshine. The sun has most definitely set on this great democracy, but when it will rise again is the true question. I mean, I guess we can just go on and address. I don't know. There's just such a tension, like such a palpable tension that I've never felt on the podcast. Like, I feel like
I think people can see it, to be honest, Damien. I mean, I was going to say that if you're watching the podcast right now live or as a recording, you know, you can see that me, Will, and Damien are not usually like this. We're usually very jumpy, especially when talking about an election that happened a day ago, in which, you know, we had two Democratic senators elected. We'd be jumpy as hell right now, to be honest with you. But what's happening right now has made us a little bit more reserved. And I think that it's going to follow us throughout this day. And we might even get angry. I really don't know. But as Damien said, today it marked a point wherein our democracy has taken a steep downhill turn. And what's going to determine how strong our values are as a nation and what holds us together is just when we get out of it and when we come together and reaffirm our faith in democracy. And I think that's going to happen relatively soon. I think that, you know, as I was speaking about in our interview with the Forsyth County News earlier today, out of calamity, two things can arise. The first one would be joining together and bonding together and coming together to pursue a greater future. And the second thing would be breaking apart. And I think that there is no question in the back of my mind that this will bring us further together than we've ever been before. And I think that it's going to be a calamity that brings us together and secures our faith in democracy as we need it. But, you know, just to speak about the big thing here, if you guys don't know, which you should know by now, it was all over the waves. But today, as I said before, the Capitol literally got stormed by Trump supporters, pro-Trump mobs in Washington, D.C. They were having a rally earlier that day where Trump came out and spoke to. They had Trump's children come out and speak to about how they would never concede the election and how there were millions of votes that Trump won by. Now, false, as we know, election voter fraud claims, as we'll talk about later. But that is kind of what led to what happened today in Washington, D.C. They infiltrated the Capitol floor. They went into senators' offices, went to Pelosi's offices and put down written threats. But the main thing is that we saw an affront to our democracy on multiple levels. On the state level, with places like I was mentioning to Will and Damien, Georgia, Kentucky, even California, Utah, and many places. And every single state, Capitol buildings were attacked, just like what happened today in Washington. And I think that it was an affront to our democracy. But I wanted to ask all of you just a very simple question that I had. Where were you when the Capitol was stormed?
Will, you want to start?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about how I found out first, because I was in school. I was just in class doing my work, and I get a Snapchat message from Damien, and Damien is like, "Hey," and I said, "Hey," and he's like, "Are you watching the news?" I'm like, "No, I'm not watching the news. I'm in school right now." And he tells me, and my first thought was, you know, was like terrorism, like, you know, like, because I had heard threats about how Iran was going to retaliate for the killing of Soleimani a year ago. And then I realized that it was terrorism, but it wasn't that kind of terrorism. So, you know, my world kind of stopped for a second. And I was just looking for more information. Like, I just didn't know how to process that. I just needed more information about what was happening. And I saw what really struck a chord with me was that picture of them barricading the door to one of the chambers of the house, and they had guns pointed at that door. And that was like, that's our capital. Like, it's shocking. It was shocking.
I was on my couch upstairs. Perks of being a virtual student, I guess. I was on my couch upstairs watching the news. I woke up at 5 a.m. I was taking my dog to the vet. I get home, and on my way back from the vet, me and my mother are talking about the victory for democracy last night. And it wasn't just a victory because Democrats won. It was a victory because Kelly Loeffler, the night before, at a Trump rally, had said that she would be, she would be contesting the votes, the electoral votes. And Georgia said, try it. You won't. And Georgia stood up and let her know that if she was going to contest democracy and the processes that we hold dearly, that it was going to be the last thing she ever did as a senator. And that is apparent now. And we had this discussion on the car ride home about how, again, here comes the sun. I get home. I get to see the beginning of the votes, the electoral votes being counted. I see the joint chambers of Congress, the guy comes out, Madam Speaker, the United States Senate. The Senate comes in, and there's the democratic process that takes place. And on the outside, seemingly another staple of democracy was taking place, a protest. So they go Alabama, no one contests the votes. And they get to Arizona. And, Joe Biden won Arizona, so Republicans stand up and object. Ted Cruz, get a little round of applause. Cowards, traitors, they don't deserve anything, let alone a round of applause. But they get it. They return to their respective chambers of Congress to deliberate and to argue. Mitch McConnell says that these aren't the values of Americans. These aren't the values of Republicans. And what is being done is something that the Democrats would do, and that we are the Republican Party are putting up a double standard here. We complained about, again, speaking from the perspective of the Republican Party, complained about how the Democrats refused to accept Trump as president, and here we go doing the exact same thing and not accepting Joe Biden as president. How we're not even letting him get to his inauguration. Without trying to kick him out of office. And then it stops. Then it flashes back to a video of Madam Speaker Nancy Pelosi standing up and everyone evacuating. And CNN, I'm watching CNN, then cuts. We were flipping between CNN and Fox News. Then cuts to people storming the stairs of democracy, climbing up the stairs of our nation's capital. And I'm watching this live. And, it's something that that makes you want to hold back tears. And I did. It hurts. It hurts because as much as we might have differences here, and me and Varun, how we argue about economic, policies and socialism and capitalism and whatnot. But one thing that we cannot disagree on is democracy. That democracy prevails, and it's the process of the people. And unfortunately, domestic terrorists took it upon themselves today to attempt to overthrow democracy to make sure that the democratic process did not prevail. And I fortunately, unfortunately, got to see it live. But one thing that hurt was that while I saw, and you know, you say that you don't want to make things a subject about race, but how can we not talk about race with what happened the past year? But you see white men and women storming the stairs where our representatives, the people we protect the most in this country, are in. The vice president of the United States, the vice president of the vice president elect are all in this building, and they're walking in there like it's a picnic. They're just going in. When Jacob Blake tried getting in his car, 7 shots is what he was answered to. In his back, trying to get in his vehicle with his kid in the backseat. When Black Lives Matter protests were fighting for their lives, not for a democratic process, not for anything political, what were they met with? Armed guards. They were met with Kyle Rittenhouse. Where is Kyle Rittenhouse now? Where is an individual protecting the people's house? Because that's what it is. It's the people's house. And no other people have, no terrorists have a right to disrespect the people's house. Kyle Rittenhouse defended a gas station. Today we saw the walls of democracy threatened. The foundation that it was built on that has not been threatened in this way since 1814 when the British burnt down our capitals. Americans did this. Americans, quote unquote, self-proclaimed. They're nothing but terrorists. They're nothing but traitors. And the instigators are just as culpable behind these acts. That includes Trump, and that includes Ted Cruz.
It was beautiful said. I think that, you know, both of you were right in that it is homegrown terrorism. We have nobody to blame but ourselves and our blatant disrespect for the Constitution, for the values that hold our country together. Speaking from what I saw, I was like, well, I was in school and I did see it out of a classroom and I did see it through Damien. And Damien talked about it to me last night. He was talking about how you may see violence tonight or tomorrow in Washington, D.C., and I didn't pay much heed to it. I didn't pay much heed to it when Trump came out earlier today and told his supporters, tens of thousands of people outside of the Capitol, that he would never concede the election, that we would never concede the election. And it just was a blatant reawakening. I had begun hearing accounts from it across the class, and Damien texted me asking about, you know, have you heard what happened at the Capitol? And I went, no. And as soon as I go on Twitter, well, I see it. The Capitol is being stormed. And immediately I thought it was some kind of a wicked joke, which turned out not to be a joke at all. And I think that we talk a lot on the podcast about democracy and about the values of democracy and how we can protect those values and how democracy and voting can be protected. But this is just a blatant affront to everything we know to be true in this nation. And we talk about the State of the Union. And we talk about what kind of a condition that democracy is in. And now we know, I believe, that that democracy that we know and we love is in peril. And so our jobs, my job, Will's job, and Damien's job, as podcasters becomes even more important when considering what is going on. And this is not a usual podcast, let me tell you. We usually go much faster and much less sentimental. But I think the moment calls for us being sentimental. You know, I did see bits and pieces of what was going on, obviously not in detail. I wasn't at home. I was at school. I was going through my emotions, but I saw that but the vice president of the United States said that he loved the Constitution and that he respected it, and for that reason that he could not support President Trump's efforts to thwart the electoral process, and I think that I respect him for it. And there's a difference between, you know, being blatantly anti-democratic and being conservative. There's a very big difference. And I think that, you know, the minority of people we saw today should not be representative, and they're not representative of the entire party. I sure hope they're not, because I still have faith in the Republican Party. I still have faith that it's recovering. And it's people like, you know, I would never be saying this 1 month or even 10 days ago, but I have faith in people like Mitch McConnell, Brad Raffensperger, Gabriel Sterling, and you know, to a sense, even people like Mike Lee and Tom Cotton, who may be completely opposite of what I am in terms of ideology, but at least they stand for the same democratic principles that I do, that the election should not be interfered with, and that there was no widespread voter fraud, no matter how much you can try to speak it into existence, it didn't exist. And I think that, you know, I think Trump really should consider, not Trump, but Republicans in his periphery should really consider the 25th Amendment with Vice President Mike Pence, because simply speaking right now, if you all don't know, the 25th Amendment is the opportunity for a vice president to take up the office of president for the remainder of the president's term. If 2/3 of each chamber of Congress votes on that resolution, and right, he has a 25th Amendment book.
For those that can't see the podcast visually, yeah. I'm holding up a 25th Amendment copy of the 25th Amendment book.
And one of the most important things to consider right now is not just the fact that exists, but the fact that being as that it's so late in the game, with Trump's term only, I guess it's 14 days until Joe Biden gets inaugurated, because it's so close to that date, we Democrats theoretically would only need a simple majority in both chambers to invoke the 25th Amendment and immediately put Mike Pence into power. And that is not a large majority comparatively to reach when you have a Democratic House of Representatives and Democratic Senate. And now, Will, I wanted your opinion just as a conservative yourself. Would it be in the best interest of conservatives to invoke the 25th Amendment? And do you believe there's any chance that they would do so?
Well, you got to consider there are only 2 weeks left of this man being in office. There is, what, 12? No. Four, okay, yeah, there is exactly 2 weeks from now, Joe Biden will be sworn in as the country's 46th president. Like, do we go out of our way to put Mike Pence in office, honestly?
Well,
if it doesn't take away time from,
I want to throw this just so that you can keep going with your commentary. If the president of the United States, President Donald J. Trump, is impeached, this would shoot down any chance that he has of running for office again. So that's also something to take into consideration just as you keep going.
I think we're talking about the 25th here. We'll go to impeachment in a little bit. The 25th is different.
Yeah, sorry. You're right. You're completely right. Yeah. You're completely right.
Yeah. We don't have time for impeachment. It's too late in the game for that. Invoking the 25th would be, you know, it's, I don't think it's ever happened, has it?
It has. There's few circumstances where the 25th Amendment has happened. It's specifically like I remember with H.W. Bush when he went into surgery. Right. It's just when a president is unfit to serve. So for an extended period of time, the vice president or for a certain period of time, the vice president will take office. So especially, you know, when a president is under anesthesia, if an executive decision needs to be made, if a foreign power feels like they want to declare war on us and we need to go at war, we need someone to be in power. So those moments when the president is literally unfit, the 25th Amendment has been invoked.
Right. I mean, do I think it should happen? I can't say at this point. I mean, it's up to Congress at this point. I have no opinion on it. If they want to put Mike Pence in power for 2 weeks, look, let me give it to you this way. If you put Mike Pence in power for 2 weeks, it's going to be, he's going to be using it to campaign for in 3 years when he runs for president. And I don't think Democrats want to do that. As much as they hate Trump, as much as they want to get him out of power, I think that when Mike Pence decides to run, and he will, when he decides to run for president in the 2024 election, he's going to use, they look to me when Trump was unfit and he's going to slam Trump and yada yada, but that's good for him. And if I'm a Democratic congressman or senator, I do not want to give Mike Pence the platform because I want to keep, you know, I want to keep my guy in the White House. So,
yeah,
there's different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, that makes sense. There
definitely is. Let me give one more comment here. And I think that it's important to, for me, at least, I think it's beyond politics at this point. Even as a Democrat, and as I told Will before the podcast, I've been slowly identifying with the independent, the no label movement, being between both parties and being a centrist for the most part. But as a Democrat currently, I think that it's beyond politics. I think it's going into the act of and the thought of whether or not something like this, like what happened today, the storm on Washington, would and could happen again. And so if that answer to that question is a yes, and the security of our nation could be thwarted or impacted again, I think that it's in my and in our nation's best interest to invoke the 25th Amendment, regardless of its political consequences for my party. I think that it transcends partisan politics at this point, because we have been dealing with this for quite a while, the voter fraud cases. And I think that one thing to understand just beyond things like what happened today happening again is President Trump's reported consideration of martial law. And we saw that many news sources and people from the meeting that Trump had with Sidney Powell and with Rudy Giuliani had told news sources that that the president had been considering martial law, which would basically force the electors to make a new election under the coercion of the military of the United States of America. And that meeting has been gaining attention. The past eight defense secretaries, I believe, have submitted a brief to multiple news sources at the Post to tell the president and those involved in that to never and to not consider martial law to deliver their circumstances. And so the question for me is it in the best interest of our nation to invoke the 25th Amendment to make sure we do not have a situation which involves the military of this great nation thwarting our democratic processes? And I think that the only thing that we could see in the next, 14 days up until Joe Biden's inauguration is that. And for a long time, let me tell you, I was averse to the idea of even considering that a remote possibility. But with what happened today, hell, everything's up in play. And so I think that, you know, all things considered, it's definitely a possibility and it should be considered.
Just to keep my podcast, my fellow podcastees here informed, Congress has reconvened. This comes after the death of an individual on the Capitol grounds. Congress is back in session. I would go as far as to none of us were alive during 9/11, and obviously this isn't an atrocity on the scale of 9/11, but this almost does feel, in a sense, like our own 9/11. And I say that because 9/11 wasn't just about the nearly 3,000 lives that were lost. It was about the buildings that went down and what they stood for. They stood for freedom. They were signs of democracy, signs of everything that this nation is supposed to stand for. And today we saw hooligans, terrorists, break into the Capitol and do, you know, Republicans and conservatives attack, you know, are very strong on their stance on Al-Qaeda and terrorism and whatnot. And we fought a war on terrorism just to come back and do it to ourselves. I'm at a loss for words genuinely with the emotions that I'm feeling. I don't understand how, you know, I'll go with this point. Again, me and Varun have been talking. Varun was talking about how he's leaning more towards the center. I obviously have dispersed very quickly and farly to the left with a lot of ideas. And I've mentioned several times now that my fear with the implementation of socialist policies is that that the American people will get upset and that it'll happen quickly. You know, that it'll happen and there'll be a revolution and Marxism will just go into full scale effect. And that is never successful. That won't be successful if we just completely overthrow. I always thought that if we want to, you know, start going towards the left, that we have to do it slowly in the Capitol. We have to pass laws that reflect what Americans want, not just allow a coup to take over and inform socialist policies. I thought we were a lot closer to a socialist revolution than a fascist one. But today, I had no other words but fascism scrolling through my mind, an entitlement to an office, American flags being waved in our Capitol by intruders. I think the most disgusted that I got today was when I saw a Confederate flag in our capital. A Confederate flag in our capital. KKK flags waving proudly outside of our capital. Nazi flags on the grounds of our capital. Individuals with their feet on the desk of the Speaker of the House, letting her know that they won't back down. All of this happening inside of our capital. I didn't know. I had a feeling that something was stirring, but I didn't know that we were here. I didn't know that we were there. And I don't have, and anyone that I'm on the verge of just losing it with individuals that can still support this BS, to be honest, right? You know, to not use vulgar terms or words. I always believe that that individuals that really are with the president are just misinformed. But if you stand by the president right now, I have lost, I think, all measures of respect for you. After the Twitter video, the incompetent Twitter video that he released today, instigating the terrorists, instigating the terrorists inside our Capitol to keep doing what they were doing, while just calling for them to go home. It's like, oh, I know that we lost and that what you guys are doing are right, but you guys should go home. But we lost. Don't forget that we lost. Don't forget that I completely understand where you're coming from. And if I was in your position, I would also be storming the Capitol, but you should probably go home. If you still manage to stand by the president after everything that has transcended today, shame. Shame on you.
I mean, I think you put it best. Before Trump's account got
the president who exhorted them to come to our nation's capital.
Situation and what that implicates. But before it got deactivated, Trump tweeted out probably one of his worst, if not the worst tweet that he had out today, which was far worse than the video he had out, which basically praised Republican protesters, rioters, terrorists. In the Capitol, while also telling them to go home. There was a tweet that said, this is what happens essentially, because I can't read it out loud right now because I don't have the tweet on me, it was deleted, that said essentially that, you know, this is what happens when democracy is thwarted, and this is what happens when thousands and thousands and millions of votes are cast out. And once again, propagating that same lie, it caused tens of thousands of people to storm the Capitol building, our nation's foremost cradle today. And he said that it was basically a consequence of Democrats. And I think that it's the most blatantly inconsiderate you can get. People talk about President Trump telling them to go home. Well, the only reason, the only way, the only route through which you can take to get these protesters and rioters and terrorists home would be to concede the election. And it really is quite simple. It takes two words. It takes I concede. And you know, I think we might, you know, with social media, what's going on with Twitter, we might see Trump move over to Parler and continue to propagate what he's saying. But as I'm looking at Twitter right now, I'm seeing that Senator Ron Johnson, during the whole election certification process, he's one of the most outspoken allies of President Trump and also a guy who wants the election results to be questioned. He said that he was asked if him and his colleagues take any responsibility for what happened in the Capitol building. And to that he said, absolutely not. And I got no words because I think that now is the time for reconciliation, and reconciliation begins with us admitting our flaws. But I'm going to let you speak for a minute because I know you have a lot, you know, going through your mind.
Right. Well, we need to remember that, and this is, of course, my opinion, and that's why I'm on this podcast, is to share my opinion. But I don't think those people who stormed the Capitol building today are Republicans. They can't be. Republicans would have the country's best interest in mind. Those people who stormed the Capitol today are terrorists.
aren't Americans.
They're domestic terrorists. They're not Americans. They don't have the country's best interests in mind. Otherwise, they'd let the democracy that happened in November happen in December on December 14th when the electors voted. And it was supposed to happen today, and it's happening right now when our Congress is reconvening under conditions that are, we don't even know, but, you know, we obviously saw the photos and footage inside of the Capitol building, and it's horrible, but we need to remember that, yeah, they were carrying Trump flags, but they aren't Republicans, and I don't think Trump is a Republican at this point either, so...
Yeah,
but you said you, what else did you say, Varun? I kind of,
yeah, I know it's been hard to focus. I was mainly just talking about how many Republicans have been shifting blame from themselves, such as Ron Johnson, to other people, and how, I mean, what you said, just to respond to it. I have always believed that, you know, a lot of people were comparing, Black Lives Matter protests and protests and some of the riots to what happened today in the Capitol. And first of all, I disavow that equation, because you can't equate people fighting for their lives with people affronting democracy and being met with absolutely nothing. And people who were rioting and even protesting for that matter being met with tear gas and with rubber bullets. And so the one thing I got from the whole argument was that as much as Black Lives Matter rioters should not be associated with the Democratic Party or the Black Lives Matter movement, Republican dissenters today who stormed our Capitol should not be associated with the Republican Party. And at this point, Trumpists shouldn't be compared with the Republican Party either. I think the Republican Party knows better. They know better. We saw many people from both parties, and people like Mitt Romney, people like Mitch McConnell, completely disavow what happened today. And so there is hope. I believe there's hope. And I think that what is needed, and I've spoken about this a lot, is a knock in the back, a slap in the face to Republicans who do support President Trump, to say, we got to get back to McCain Republicanism and Mitt Romney Republicanism, and even just American Republicanism, and not selling our souls out to a vision that isn't American. And so it will take that slap. And I think that slap was delivered yesterday. It was delivered on November 3rd in the House, the Senate, and the presidency.
Yeah. I woke up today, this morning, and I saw that we had lost the Warnock race. And, you know, then later found out we had lost the Ossoff race, too. And I was like, oh, shit, we lost. Mm-hmm. Sucks. And then I see about this, and I'm like, oh, Republicans lost twice today, because first, the races in Georgia, and now this is being blamed on Republicans. And yeah, it's I can't say that it's entirely like, you know, senators who are trying to like investigate their own ideas of voter fraud, like senators and representatives. I can't say it's entirely their fault. I can say, however, with no question, it is entirely Donald Trump's fault, because he was the one who literally told them to go march on the Capitol. Go down there, tell them what you think. That's what he said. And it, you know, I know you had also said something about how I felt about his Twitter being deactivated. And I told you this, Varun, but Varun told me they deactivated his Twitter, and my response was about 4 years too late. It's about 4 years too late,
yeah,
that they deactivated that deranged man's Twitter. And, you know, just 2 weeks left, you know, we're about to go in with a new president. We're about to see a new Congress, and 2021 is going to be an interesting year, because it's like Joe Biden is moving into a house where all the windows are broken and the glass is everywhere, and he's going to be the one who has to clean all that up. So I'm very much looking forward to how the Biden administration is going to run this country, especially after things like this. And I'm not using notes right now when I'm talking. I'm looking at pictures from the Capitol, like, and this isn't the America I know. This isn't the America I want to live. Like, this is, I have a lot of expectations for President Biden. So. Yep.
We do too. And this looks like a third world country. This looks like one of the countries that we go in and try to put up a fascist, you know, a far right regime inside of. This looks like one of the countries that we try to prop up a democratic hypocrisy is what I would call it, because it's just a puppet democracy. But this does not look like the leader of the free world. It doesn't. And you know, I told Will that it serves me no good, and I am the biggest believer in this idea. It serves me no good to tell you I told you so. It does nothing for me. It does no good to, and I'm not speaking to Will directly, but to tell, you know, to tell Republicans and people that were like, oh, he's not fascist, he's going to change when he gets into the White House. Oh, he has America's best interests. I told you so. It does me no good. It serves me no purpose. It cures no wound that I might have in my heart. My heart was broken today like it has never been broken before. When Donald Trump went into office, I've always had political aspirations since youth, you know? Yeah, I mean, who doesn't have dreams of
yeah.
And especially, you know, us, who doesn't have dreams of sitting in that Oval Office one day? But as I saw the last 4 years unfold, I wondered if there would be an Oval Office for me to sit in. I wondered if there would be walls of democracy for me to paint my mark on. I wondered if there would even be anything reminiscent of a foundation of the nation that I had grown to love. And I think right now, as Will was saying, we're giving the keys over to a house flipper, you know. Hopefully he can flip the house and he can sell it for more than it's worth. He can hand that baton. You know, Obama talks about how the presidency is a race, and everyone runs their portion of the race. And when you get past the baton, you go as far as you can, and you hope that the next person can run further. We unfortunately managed to pass the baton to an individual that ran backwards. You know, it was one of those moments in sports. It's like one of those bloopers that you see on a what's it called, Shaq and a Fool, where the guy scores on the wrong basket. He grabbed the baton from Obama and he ran backwards, and we're being left behind, not only in terms of democracy. Economically, we're being left in behind. We're being left in distraught as a nation because of this president's actions. And I still sit here and after we won the Senate yesterday, after we won the White House, after we maintain the House of Representatives, I still feel defeated. I still feel like there is so much more to do. And right now, there are no excuses for this administration. You have the Senate, you have the House, and you have, most importantly, America. I think that true patriots and true Americans understand the time that we are in right now, and the importance of backing the democratically elected Biden administration. Understand the importance of not only backing them, but putting pressure on them to make sure that our policies that we want implemented are implemented. If the American people want $2,000 stimulus, it has been too long that we have forbade the American people from getting what they want, whether it be via voter suppression or whether it be by Mitch McConnell holding a bill that the American people want voted on and frankly want passed. I think that it is a testament that we are tired. And I talked about the political victory on November 3rd when Biden, or a couple days later when Biden won. But I talked about the moral defeat that 70 million Americans can still support this man. And I hope that those who supported him yesterday, today, for them, maybe this sun that we keep talking about has risen. And there is hope for them. And they have caught up. And they are no longer believing this misinformation. They are no longer being manipulated. Because you know what this man is? He's not a patriot. He's not a Republican. He's not a father. He's not a husband. Oh, he's been a husband 3 times, but that's beyond the point. He is a grifter. He is a facade. He is a manipulator. He is the leader of the coup. You know, we, again, Republicans talk about Baghdadi and talk about bin Laden. And these are all people that we look at as terrorist leaders. Well, guess what? Today, we saw a new terrorist leader take place. And my fear is that the Republican Party will reject Donald Trump. And we will see the party of Donald Trump rise. We have to be prepared now. We have seen that unprecedented processes and unprecedented actions have taken place over the last 4 years. And I tweeted today something that I've heard a million times. That can't happen here. This is America. That can't. Fascism in America? Hell no. That can't happen in this country. A coup in America? That doesn't happen here. We're Americans. Who are you kidding? We're not them. Well, guess what? We are. It happened here. We failed today. And we failed because we had the foresight to see what could have come, but half of America failed to accept it. So to that half of America, I do not want to push you down. But I extend my hand to you. And I can assure you, the 80 million Biden supporters, although they might feel angry and might feel some sort of way, those who voted for Biden extend their hands to you. Join us. Because although we may not agree on free health care or what, who to tax and how to tax them and how what we should do with those taxes, one thing that I hope that we can all agree on is that what happened, what transcended today, what has transcended for the past 4 years, and what might transcend in the next 4 with the rise of possibly a literal Trumponian party. And if I call it now, I will say I told you so. We do not want this to happen. And right now we have the opportunity to say, not in our house, not in this America.
Yeah. It's madness right now. You saw, if you haven't seen yet, Senator James Lankford, one of the senators who was with the fight with Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley to contest the Electoral College's results, has just came out about 1 or 2 minutes ago and told the Senate floor that he disavowed, first of all the violence that happened today, and second of all, the claims of voter fraud. He said it couldn't pass, so he wouldn't pursue it further, and he would move towards confirming the Electoral College victory of Joe Biden as our 46th president. And so I think one of the biggest things that we have to consider when talking about the olive branch that Damien was mentioning was, all due respect to all Republicans, you can't do both, right? You can't play both sides. You can't try to vote in Perdue and Loeffler of whom I don't know about Perdue. I'm pretty sure Perdue is disgusted with efforts to not contest the election. He supported contesting the election. And Loeffler said, and she promised Trump supporters that she would go into office and contest the Electoral College's results. And this is people like that and people like President Trump who caused people to storm the Capitol building today. And I think that it's hypocrisy to go support Perdue and Loeffler. And also to talk about how disgusting what happened today was. Because in all reality, you may think what you want about Perdue and Loeffler, but one thing is clear, they did not support democracy, and they still cry voter fraud, even when the AG of the United States, Attorney General Barr, one of the most staunch allies of President Trump, came out and said, along with every other state legislature, that voter fraud was not true, simply was not true, and cannot be true enough to reverse the election results. So it pains me because so many Republicans today, and I talked to my history teacher about this, the fact that they contest this very same election from which they are speaking. Four of the people who contested the election and were supposed to contest it at least today, I don't know how they're going to vote now, actually were voted in by the same election that confirmed Joe Biden. How much of a hypocrisy is that?
It's gross.
And so Marjorie Taylor Greene responded to that comment about how her election was also to be put under jeopardy if she successfully contested the election of Joe Biden by saying that it only applies for the general. It doesn't apply for the primary election that elected Marjorie Taylor Greene and the other Republicans who won in the House overwhelmingly. And it's just hypocrisy on all ends. And I think that one thing I wanted to mention to bring somewhat of a lighthearted comment what we're having today in terms of the discussion is what Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister, Chancellor of Germany, posted on Twitter 2 hours ago. I can assure you that my departure from office is going to be very boring. And and it's funny. Angela Merkel is quite charismatic person, and so it was pretty funny. Just a couple of things before I hand it over.
Yeah.
To kind of close out topics that I wanted to present. Biden spoke today. And it was belated. Obviously, it wasn't direct as a response that many other Democrats had to what was happening. But he told President Trump, he called on him, he pleaded to him to come out and to concede the election. And I think his speech was pretty powerful. It was short, it was concise, and it was good. And beyond that, I think that, you know, a lot of Republicans talked about how Colin Kaepernick was protesting unfairly and wrongly by kneeing in front of the flag of our nation during an NFL game. And those same Republicans are coming out and storming the U.S. Capitol and calling that peaceful protest. I think there's a huge hypocrisy there. And there's a lot of hypocrisy going on both sides. But that is possibly one of the biggest hypocrisies. And also, one other far-stretched thing I was thinking of was the fact that, simply put, the fact that a person can bring in guns without any restrictions to our nation's Capitol building, with children in that building, and force our senators and House representatives from the House hide from them, it just shows how much more background checks we need to get people to hold guns. Gun control, in my opinion, needs to be passed. And I've done a lot of research about this. I don't agree with Joe Biden's resolutions. We should take away AR-15s and ban certain guns. I don't think it's worth our time. What I do think, though, is that we should institute universal background checks and crack down upon open carry states, which allowed what happened today to happen, and which allow tons and tons of children to be put into fear in schools, as all three of us, I'm sure, have been exposed to in our community over several threats of gun violence last year to happen. And it's a lesson that we should learn from today. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that, and the very last thing I wanted to mention was the fact that Mitch McConnell, as much as I have my own opinions about Mitch McConnell, he tried to stop this. He came out earlier before just the results were confirmed and before this whole sham happened. And he said that we should stand behind Joe Biden because he won the election fairly. And because he knew that contesting the election would create two branches of the Republican Party, the Trumponians, who were part of that cult mindset, and the Republicans, and also this third party of people who were in the middle ground between Trumponians and Republicans, people like Tom Cotton, who would support every single other Trump policy except for the sham that is the election fraud investigations. And there's three branches that are happening right now, and I do believe that it would splinter the party and it will splinter the party as we're going forward in the elections. And I think Mitch McConnell, he failed in unifying his own party, and for that, he will now be called Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And that's his consequence. And I think the people who were seditionists today should have consequences, as every single other seditionist had a consequence in the history of our nation. We will learn from this. We will recover from it. And a new day will be seen in good time. Now, let me just hand it over to Will before we end out the podcast. But I think that I'm proud to be able to speak on this level with all of you today. This podcast is a blessing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that we all have a platform to speak our mind, and especially about such subjects as this. I will say I agree with you completely about the whole splintering of the Republican Party, because we might not realize it, but this is going to be huge in, you know, 4 years, and sooner than that, 2 years, we're going to have, you know, we're going to have representatives running, and, you know, they might not know whether to campaign off, whether they voted with Trump or not on issues. And that could be, you know, that's going to be difficult for them, because there's going to be two types of Republicans. And just like in 2016, there was two types of Democrats. That you were for Hillary, or you were for Bernie, or you were in the middle, you didn't really care. But and that was probably the reason that Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, is because the Democratic Party was split between these two candidates. And I'm afraid, as a conservative, as a Republican, that we may not see another Republican president for a while because of what we just saw here. And it's frightening, because even as a Republican, I like to see diversity. I mean, in a world where there's just, you know, Democrats running everything, and like, yeah, I like to see a Democrat president every once in a while. I think that, you know, every 8 years, it's nice to have a little switch. And I think that I think that Joe Biden will get reelected. So in 8 years, I think we'll have a Republican president. But
oh, Joe Biden's not running again. Trust me, he's going to be like 80. Look, man, he's going to be. Let me just make one thing.
Yes,
he'll
go
be
for
82.
It.
Will. And I kind of interrupted Will, so I'll let him continue. But he'll be 82 years old by the time.
I just wanted to, and Will, this might add to the conversation, the question that you were having. Kelly Loeffler has said that in good faith, she cannot object to the certification of the election.
In good faith, meaning she lost and it doesn't matter anymore?
As in the presidential election. She cannot object to which I assume also means that she will not be contesting as aggressively as she might have contested the election here in Georgia. Obviously, we saw David Perdue make some remarks last night that were reminiscent of the remarks that the president made after his loss. But Kelly Loeffler, quote, you know, I cannot in good faith object to the results of the election.
Well,
why would Kelly Loeffler have the opportunity to object anyways?
Yeah,
I thought she was out of office.
She's still sworn in as the U.S. senator right now. She's speaking on the congressional floor.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had no idea. I thought.
Yeah. No. No worries. No worries. That's okay. Something that might be a little bit confusing. Georgia senators, as of right now, are still technically. Well, it's weird because they're technically not senators right now, but they still are. Listen, democracy is weird, and we saw that happen today. But she gets to speak on behalf of Georgia in this matter, as she was sworn in when it pertained to her, mm-hmm. or it she was sworn in as it pertains to this matter.
Right, so. And that's interesting, because she, you know, she ran on her 100% Trump voting, like she voted with Trump 100% of the things that he did or that he put through. You know, people he nominated for the judicial system, she voted with him 100% for her. So for her to come say that is really politically, she's a coward. I mean, and I don't like Trump, but I mean, look at what, you know, you can't campaign on the man. Like that was one of her primary like running things. You saw in almost every single one of her advertisements is, I have 100% Trump voting rate. And she would say that, and for her to come out and not stick with, I mean, it's good she's not promoting anything now. Like it's good that she's giving it up, but at the same time, I never liked her. But.
Yeah, I want to chime.
I don't think a lot of people like Kelly Loeffler.
She's
not very personable. But one thing I wanted to say was sure, it's disloyal, but if that's what disloyal is, I mean, Purdue did today was disloyal as well. Not Purdue. I'm mistaken that. I'm speaking directly of
About his remarks? Because Brian Kemp has made some genuine. Yeah, go for it.
I am very disillusioned and just kind of jumbling right now, but Pence was the one I was talking about.
There you go.
The fact that Pence made a lot of remarks about how he stuck to the Constitution, therefore could not defend President Trump. And President Trump used the same words before his Twitter got deactivated. He called Pence a coward. And I think that for Loeffler, politically, she may be a coward, but as an American, she stood by her Constitution. I think that it's all good. As much support as the electoral process can get, I am happy to welcome in. And that's what I'm going to end on. Damien, go ahead and make your point.
To end on this point, I have made several callings to Americans tonight. We are talking about Kelly Loeffler's cowardice in the moment. And I think that, Rune, you mentioned that Mitch McConnell, you're very proud that he stood for that. I disagree. I disagree with your take on Mitch McConnell. I disagree with your take on Cotton. I disagree because these people spearheaded the initiative to get Donald Trump into office. These people were at the forefront of it. They didn't come out and say that Obama was born here. No, they let it simmer. They let the pot boil. And wow, if you see a small little fire starting up in someone's house, sure, you can say, you know what? It's not necessarily my house. I don't have an obligation to put out the fire. But you can in that moment. You can in that moment choose to do the right thing and stomp on the fire and not let these racist, divisive seeds be planted. Mitch McConnell did not do that. Mitch McConnell did not go up and say there was not good people on both sides. He did not come and say the immigrants that come here are amazing people. And although some of them, a very small percentage of them, as a matter of fact, less of them than U.S. citizens commit crimes, we have an immigration problem. We have two different solutions to it, but they are one thing for certain, and that is not rapists. They are decent people who come here to try to make a living, to try to provide for their family, and a few of them might be bad. Not the other way around. Not all of them are rapists. Not all of them are bringing drugs. Not all of them are bringing crime, and a few, I suppose, are good people. When we saw the events at Charlottesville take place, Mitch McConnell didn't come out and say, you know what, the president of the United States is wrong. No, he lets the division boil because he thought, as Madison would say, he let his darker angels prevail. He let his darker angels prevail. He let the power that he was hungry for. He thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to ride this camel that is Donald Trump. I don't know. I don't agree necessarily with what he's saying. And I'm sure that at many times in private, Mitch McConnell disagreed with what the president of the United States was saying. But hell, he knew how to draw up a crowd and he knew how to get people to vote for him. And even more concerningly, he knew how to get people unelected and how to make sure that people lost elections. So Mitch McConnell was scared, and he and Republicans took advantage as cowards. They took it. And I'm happy that they're seeing the light. Sure, but too little, too late. We need to vote them out of office. They need to be taken out of their positions. I am no longer content with Senator, I tweeted it last night, Mitch McConnell sounds amazing. And then Hillary copied my tweet. She probably saw it. She tweeted it this morning. But you know, I'm no longer content with Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. I want former Majority Leader and former Senator Mitch McConnell. I am no longer happy with the man that wrote a piece titled Send in the Troops, sitting in a house of the people that today was overrun by terrorists. These people, made sure they laid the foundation for these ideas by not breaking it when it was being set. They watched the construction company that is Donald Trump come in and set up this pot and make sure that it boiled and it boiled. And when it started overfilling and they were like, hey, we got to put the lid on this thing, it was too late. Americans have been radicalized, and we are going to see the repercussions of that for years to come. Varun, me and you might have to deal with that. While right now it is a time of healing, we can just as easily say that it is a time of division, and it is a time of hurt that comes with that healing. I think that some of our, you know, just to respond one more time, you guys were saying that that you can't blame, you know, Mitch McConnell and whatnot, and that that these people are not Republicans. These people that stormed the Capitol today, and it aches me to say this, and it's hard for me to say this, are Americans. They're Republicans that have been misinformed and misled by the President of the United States. They have been misinformed and misled that what they are doing is in the best interest of the people. They have been misinformed and misled to believe that President Donald Trump is their savior. They are Americans. And I constantly reiterate on this podcast that no one, and I mean no one, is too far gone that they can't be saved. And I called for Ted Cruz and et al. In this matter to be tried under treason. And I still believe that. But we have to try to reform these Americans, because they don't disappear tomorrow. These Republicans, and I'm sorry, because it's what they are. It's who they voted for. It's the name that they bubbled in on the ballot. Republican, Republican, Republican. It's probably the cards that they carry in their wallet. Republicans. These Republicans are our neighbors. We go to school with them. They drive their kids to school with us. We might even carpool with them. They're on our soccer teams. They play at our basketball courts, go to our gyms. And if one thing is for certain, the one thing we cannot do right now is push them away. Hug them. It is said that a friend needs you the most when they push you the furthest away. Right now, our friends on the other side of the aisle, at least, you know, hell, even for Will, you're on this side of the aisle now, brother. Our friends on the other side of the aisle need us. They need us.
I'll take bits and pieces.
Go for it.
A lot of it I don't agree with. A lot of it I do. And I'll take bits and pieces, because the beginning, I'd like to say continuously that I have never supported Mitch McConnell. You know I don't.
Yeah.
You know I don't support Tom Cotton. We've talked about this multiple times. And all of the comments I've made refer solely to the election sham that I've been talking about continuously. And I think that there is credit to be given to Tom Cotton and Mitch McConnell just in this scenario for not standing by these claims, because they easily could have. The point is that their constituents, over 70 million of them, I'm sure, believe in voter fraud. And so it's quite easy for them to go out and say that that voter fraud exists without suffering the repercussions. And so there is a consequence to that, and they're taking it. And I don't respect these people, but in this specific instance, they are. Your second claim, I agree that Democrats should try and vote out these people, root out people who don't represent conservatism and the conservative ideas. And I think that, to be honest with you, me and Will were trying to make the claim that these people, the Trump supporters, I believe, Will, if I'm not mistaken, are not conservative. And the idea of Trumpism is not conservative. And so every single person upon that definition who came out and even just spoke at that rally, went to that rally that was hosted in front of Washington, D.C., is therefore, by association, not Republican. I'm of the opinion that the Republican Party is much better than this. They're better than Tom Cotton, for sure. It's better than Mitch McConnell. And I can't wait for it to be returned to, once again, the glory of John McCain and the glory of Mitt Romney, because those people were, and they both had their faults, and they continue to have their faults, but those people were at least decent human beings. And like you said, Damien, I echo in that, the fact that in many circumstances, Republicans stood by when Trump got elected and was talking about illegal immigrants being rapists and murderers, and was talking about the Charlottesville, the rioting, and how there was active KKK support for his campaign. Everybody was loud and clear about how they didn't support Trump up until he won the nomination. And that's when their mouths went shut, and their mouths continue to be shut. And I think the only way to make sure you get people who vote with their conscience is to make that and slap them in the face in the elections, in the primaries. Make sure they know that America doesn't agree with that, agree with their views. And I think America showed that. The House, the Senate, and the presidency. The House, the Senate, and the Oval all got flicked to Democrats, and that's the slap in the face they deserve. But I think, to end here, that the people in front of Washington, D.C., they were very much not Americans and not Republicans, because of the fact that they were seditionists. And that's the very simple truth. If you support this democracy and you support this government, you would have stayed home. No matter how much you disagree with what was happening, you would have stayed home. I think those people are mentally disillusioned, to be completely honest with you. And I think that, you know, I agree with your point that we have to embrace them, but it is through love that we reform the flaws in our nation, and it is through compromise that we finally find a band-aid to what is happening right now. Because simply put, we need both sides to function as a nation. Like Will said, there is a balance to be struck in between Democrats and Republicans, but not morally. Not morally. It's politically, and solely politically. Outside of politics, we must remain strong by the same belief that this democracy holds us together and that we have common values about our morals. We must be humans, for God's sake. Forget Americans, humans. Mm-hmm. And I think that the people who are outside of Washington, D.C., forget Americans, we're not humans. And that's my opinion. Anything else to add, Will?
No, I think you absolutely covered it. I mean, I completely agree with you, Vern, when you say that they weren't Americans, because storming your Capitol building is not an American thing to do.
And I second a lot of what Ruin said, but I say that they are Republican because they found their home in the Republican Party. These people that stormed the Capitol, and I would be remiss, and I think Will would be too, and I think Mitch McConnell would be, and I think Tom Cotton would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge this. We can't just say, oh, these people, they're them. They're other ones. They don't represent the party. Well, then why were they there? You know, we made the criticisms of the Republican Party. If the KKK, if you guys aren't white supremacists, then why does the KKK fit so perfectly in with what the policies that you guys want to implement? So one thing that we cannot deny, I think that the true Republican Party should not accept these individuals. And I think that today might be the turning point. But I warn, and I say this, you know, cautioning to the American people. The Republican Party gave these individuals warmth with their ideas, and they gave their concepts a home, a base where they all culminated and elected Donald Trump. It is dangerous, this mob mentality. This is a cult that exceeds the Republican Party. It transcends the Republican Party. This is a cult that has outgrown a cancerous growth that has outgrown. It might have stemmed from the body of what the Republican Party was, and we cannot acknowledge, we cannot fail to acknowledge that. But we can also not fail to acknowledge that this cancer is still alive and well, despite what Republicans might say, because they do not respond to Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, who I would say right now is the face of the Republican Party right now, not Donald Trump anymore. As a matter of fact, I take that back. Mike Pence, I say, is right now the face of the Republican Party, the true face of the Republican Party in this moment. If he tweeted, guys, go home, they wouldn't have listened to him. They only listen to one individual, and that is dangerous. And the Republican Party has to make efforts to separate themselves and try to bring back as much of the base that Trump has to make sure that this movement, we got to do what we do in other countries, guys. And we got to admit that we do this in other countries too. We kind of kill the revolution silently and we bury it. And we're like, what happened there? We don't remember that. That's what we have to do with Trumpism. We got to be like, what? Who? Trump 40, 45. I don't know how to, when I count, I go 41, 42, 43, 44, 46. I don't know what you guys are talking about with 45. This is a made-up number.
We'll block out of the history books. Talk about making history. We'll block it out of history.
Yeah, the picture, any picture of Trump, you know, it's got to go Obama, blank picture, and then Biden. We got to forget about this. We got to try to bury our past, but we cannot fail to acknowledge that right now we're in a dangerous position where the ingredients have been bred, and I think that Donald Trump is a pre-fascist. And I agree with you, both of your takes, that the Republican Party will stem away from Donald Trump, and that that if a fascist leader is elected, they might not come from the Republican Party, but they might come from a Trumponian party. And I don't know what the name will be, but I'm calling it the Trumponian Party because, I mean, come on. It's going to be Donald Trump's party. So you might just call it.
He was talking about a Fort Trump. Trumponian doesn't sound so bad for him.
La Fiesta but, Trump. What about that? I got to start trademarking these things.
But before, let's just close out the podcast.
Absolutely.
I said, and I promised myself we'd be under 1 hour and 10, but I think we're at 1 hour and 20 minutes. And so echoing in your point, and just one sentence, the only way that this Trumponianism that you're talking about can be reformed is through the people who perpetrated it, Republicans. And so if they come out and they stop it, it will be stopped, and they have the power. It is in their hands. And that's the big message for today. We'll be back with another episode next Monday. Tune in. Damien, if you want to do your trademark outro, which you became so good at.
Absolutely. For those watching live, be sure to stay a little bit after. I'm going to provide some commentary. Will might stay around. Vroom might stay around. Depends on what they have to do. For those listening to the podcast in post or watching it on YouTube, hello, welcome. You guys can check out the podcast at our YouTube channel. It's Politatine on YouTube. We're going to be uploading visuals now so that you guys can see us and our beautiful faces getting angry. And you guys can always check into live streams. That's twitch.tv/Damien_Galvin. But ladies and gentlemen, we had a conversation unlike any other today, and a true conversation. Me and Will have disagreed in the past about statues. Me and Varun have disagreed in the past about capitalism. But today we came in agreement about the foundation of our nation, democracy, and that it will prevail, but only if we hold our hands in unity and have conversations like the ones we had today. Have these conversations, ladies and gentlemen. Have these conversations with your loved ones. Have these conversations with those you dislike. Have these conversations with individuals you know stormed the Capitol today because they need to hear it. And slowly bring them back to reality. Slowly show them that the democratic process is the way, and this nation will prevail much longer than our generation or our children's generations or our children's children's generations. And this is coming from a couple of children. So thank you guys for listening
and
to
it. Thank you, Will, man. Thank you, Will, for coming on for another episode.
Absolutely. And
love to have you always. And we hope you get over 15 episodes this season, hopefully a lot more than 15. We love having you on, man.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your input.
And like Varun was saying, thank you, Will, for adding insight to the conversation. Varun, for adding your opinions. Both of you for driving this conversation into a place that it might not have gone if I had sit here talking goofy by myself. I appreciate the listeners for listening to yet another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You guys can follow us again now on YouTube, Politatine. You guys can check out our social media. That's at Politatine Show, both on Instagram and Twitter. From there, you guys can follow both me and Varun. We have that in our bio. And thank you guys so much for tuning in to yet another episode of Politatine. Hopefully, this will be the last where we have this sort of sentiment. But until the next time, thank you guys.
thank you so very much for listening to today's episode of Polititeen. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast. That is www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast to subscribe for exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. Visit www.polititeenpodcast for more amazing content from our sponsors. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.